And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, everybody. Today is Wednesday, July 19th. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. That's right, I'm Gino. I'm back. I'm back from vacation. I'm here with Kevin. I'm here with Darren. You can listen to us any way you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Talk to us. We want to talk back to you. Give us a listen tonight as we go through the world of sports. We're doing potpourri style again. We kind of like this potpourri style. We're going around the horn. Guys, let's get it going. We're going to talk a little golf to start. Rory finally wins a tournament. He wins the Scottish Open. And now we are ready to start the Open, otherwise known as the British Open, the 151st championship at Royal Liverpool. Rory trying to actually win another major would be the same place he won the last major, 2014, 9 years ago at Royal Liverpool. Kev, start us off with some golf.
I thought Rory, obviously big win for him. The way he won it was impressive. Birdie 17 and 18 on two holes that were not giving up birdies the entire day. He finally hit a couple of putts and pulled out the win over McIntyre to become the first person in history to win the British Open, the Scottish Open, and the Irish Open, which, especially when you come from, you know, the Great Britain area, is a big deal for them. So, you know, it was big for his mindset to actually pull one out. I mean, you can see, you know, a sense of disbelief, I think, almost that last putt went in. You know, it wasn't a, wow, you know, it was more of a, wow, I can't believe that putt actually made in. He's missed so many putts in all these tournaments.
I think to finally
come through with a big clutch putt and you know, pull off a victory in what really is a great prep for the British Open, I think puts him in the right mindset and makes him dangerous coming into this week.
Yeah, he's the favorite going in on the betting odds. So,
Darren?
Yeah, I mean, listen, to me, he's supposed to win that tournament the way he's been playing. I don't take it as like this big, like, oh, my God, out of nowhere. Thank God the great Rory did it. I thought he was supposed to win that tournament. He had played well first 3 days of it. He was in the hunt. When he's in the hunt, and I'm not taking anything against McIntyre or any of the other guys. Fleetwood was up there. These are good players. But when he's the guy on the leaderboard like that, I expected him to win. Listen, he took a couple of really nice putts on 17 and 18, which is really cool. I also love watching golf. Now, Sunday, there was some sort of, like, TV problem with it, and everything was a little bit delayed in certain areas and stuff like that because of some sort of satellite issue. So people were catching it where they could. But I like waking up and watching golf. So I'm looking forward to the Open. Yep. I wake up at quarter to five, and I can put on golf while I'm, you know, doing stuff and getting scores. It's pretty cool. But, yeah, I was really happy that Rory kind of pulled that out. And I think we all want him to, I guess, win that fifth major. Not that he needs validation to go down as a great player, but to become an all-time great. I think he's got to win 5, 6 maybe to get himself into that conversation. He's probably the most famous guy in this last 10-year stretch or 9-year stretch without a major. You know what I mean? You don't expect it. So, you know, and you're right, Gino. He won here, and then he won the PGA right afterwards, right? I believe the PGA back then was August, and then he hasn't won since. So it's been 9 years. So he's, like you said, G, he's the favorite coming in here. A lot of good players. It's always going to be weather at the Open. We don't know what you're going to get. You don't know where the winds are going to kick up. Bunkers rough and really, really fescue a lot of and rain and wind. That's really okay.
I think you'd like to see Rory at this stage of his golf career now also win a major. You know, he won the four that he's won in that early stage of his career. And now it's, you know, 9 years later, it's a different type of stage for him. You'd like to see him get at least one, you know what I mean? Whether it's here or not, but you'd like to see him get at least one more at this point of his career. Like you said, not even to put validation, but you'd like to see it so that, okay, early on, he really hit the ground running. He had those four, boom, boom, boom. And okay, he's been playing okay. He played bad. He played well. And now he seems to pick it up a little bit. He wins a couple of tournaments here or there and gets another major. And, you know, at least for this stage of that career, Kev?
I think, you know, he was the most outspoken guy the last 2 years in the schism of the golf, you know, between LIV and the PGA Tour. He was so pro PGA Tour. He didn't go for the money. He didn't go for the cheap money, the blood money. You know, if you really want to get into, if you want to call it that, I know there are a lot of people who do. I think, you know, that's part of the reason why we root for him is because he was such a staunch. I am PGA Tour. I'm not taking the money from the Saudis. I'm not going to LIV. And I think, you know, a lot of people respect him for that.
Just one comment on that. There's so many things that we don't get from the Saudis. I find it hysterical. It's almost hypocritical. You're going to tell me you never went to a show that Live Nation put up because it's owned by the Saudis. Almost everything has Saudi money in it. I agree. I just like the old school, you know, I'm PGA. The PGA helped me. I'm going to support them. I was more of that than the hypocritical money thing because they all take money from wherever they can.
Yep.
Doesn't matter to me either way, but I still would like to see him get another one at this point in his career. So,
now, what you brought up, Darren, you know, talking about, you know, the weather and all. Really, when you're watching Lynx courses, though, the one defense they usually have is the weather. So you really want to see wind and rain so that you keep the scores reasonable. Because if without the weather, you play a Lynx course over there, you can easily shoot, you know, 64, 65. And all of a sudden, you're sitting there with a champion at 20 under. And it feels like, you know, just a regular tournament every week.
The one thing with the weather is when you're playing. So sometimes it's weather in the morning and not in the afternoon. And then the next day, you could be lucky again or unlucky. That's where the weather, I mean, you, like you said, sorry, something just happened here to the chair. I apologize. One of those things with Kevin, I think I hit the dog. Sorry about that. One of the things with the weather is that, you know, it's a great neutralizer. It just really is.
Okay. Kev, do you have a couple of guys who you think are going to finish well?
Well, obviously, you know, I mean, you've got the usual cast of characters. You've got Scheffler and Rahm, who, you know, Scotty finished third this week at the Scottish Open, so he's definitely right there. And one of the guys that I keep waiting to see break out and finally win one of these, because it feels like he's in contention, or at least on the leaderboard every year, or every major on a Sunday, is Tommy Fleetwood. And if he's sitting there, I've got him at plus 5,500. No, I like those odds on him. You know, I'm not sure what his top 10 odds are, but, you know, that seems to be he's always around, and you just keep waiting for him to win one of these. And being from England, you know, if he's going to win one, this seems to be a good spot for him to win.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this stuff is going to be a group of the favorites. So from that perspective, you know, you're going to see hear the same names right at the top with the odds. So it's Rory and Scheffler and Rahm and Koepka and Dustin Johnson. I think Scheffler and Koepka are going to both play well in this tournament. I got some weird feeling about Cam Smith this week. I think Cam Smith is going to play good. And
he's a defending champ.
I'm going out on a limb, and I think Ricky Fowler is going to play well. I'm not saying he's going to win this, but I got a feeling Ricky's going to come out and play really well. Played really well the last big tournament, as we know, down the stretch of the PGA, he couldn't hang on. But I got this feeling with him.
And he's another guy that, you know, a week or two after he won the follow up tournament. So I think that gives him the feeling of, hey, I've won again.
Yeah. Tommy Fleetwood, like you said, for top 10, is it plus 260 right now? So that's pretty good. The four guys that I liked were Scheffler at minus 140. Koepka plus 200, Cam Smith at plus 220, and Ricky Fowler at plus 260. There's no one there that's crazy odds. They're all kind of in there, but, you know, two or three of those. I also got I took all four of those guys, and if you take top 10 parlay with Fowler and Scheffler, it's plus 475. And the other two I took together, so top 10, Koepka and Cam Smith, and it was plus 700. So I kind of like between those four single bets and those two parlay bets, that's probably what I'll go with to try to put something together. Darren, any guys you're
I always look at Lowry in these tournaments because I think he just plays well. And he plays well in big tournaments to start, and he plays well overseas always. So I think that Lowry's a top 10 guy to look at here. I like Fleetwood, like Kev said also.
Lowry, just so you know, Lowry is at plus 360 for the top 10. No, so that's
pretty good.
I like that.
Another Irishman.
Yeah, I mean, he plays well over there. I think Danny Willett's a guy to look at a little bit. And then an odd one is Sam Burns is someone that's standing out to me a little bit. Him and Keegan Bradley are two guys that stand out to me a little bit as well. I'm curious to see where they are at.
Okay, so Sam Burns is at plus 550. Keegan Bradley is at plus 750. And Danny Willett, what you mentioned, is there anything going on with him that I don't know about?
Not really. Because he's just he hasn't played well, but the Brit. So I just feel like this. If there's a tournament he could turn it around, it could be this. He hasn't been great though.
I thought his odds would be a little bit better. I mean, to win the tournament, he's plus 60,000.
Yeah, I'm not betting
him for that. To finish in the top 10, he's plus 3,500.
I knew he was a very long shot. He hasn't played well. I mean, the simple fact of the matter, he hasn't played well, but he's playing at home. So sometimes, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's just taking a shot on a guy. I know it's a long shot. I think a lot of people are discounting Rahm right now. Listen, and I think Rahm is too good a player to discount.
Listen, Danny Willett, put 10 bucks on him. It's plus 350. I mean, you win 350 bucks with that. I mean, it's
a no-brainer in that respect.
If you have a feeling for a top 10 finish, that it's a good bet. I mean, a couple others I mentioned. So Rory is the favorite for the top 10. But surprisingly, Scheffler is plus 700 to win, and Rory is at plus 800 to win. So they actually have Scheffler with better odds to win the tournament. But yet, top 10, Rory is at minus 105, and Scheffler is at minus 140. Those are the only two at the minus to finish in the top 10. Everybody else is plus money.
Last guy that I think this guy has a real good shot to win, Victor Hovland. Where's his numbers at?
Plus 2,200 to win and plus 240 for the top 10. So that's not bad at all. Plus 240.
Victor Hovland's been playing real well. He actually impressed me in losing a couple of these majors. I thought he's had the best season on this continent that I've seen him have.
Yeah, he's another guy that you just keep waiting that he's going to win one of these.
Absolutely. Coming up here I agree
next
with
year.
You.
If not this weekend, definitely within the next year or two, you feel like he's going
to. He's young. He's young. He hits it a ton and he's good.
Yeah.
We'll see. So, okay, gun to the head. Who's winning it? G?
Scotty Scheffler.
Kev?
Tommy Fleetwood.
Victor Hovland. Okay, we have our three out there. We put them out there. Nobody took Rory. Nobody took Rahm. Let's see what happens.
Yep.
Okay.
Only reason why I say that is Rory's the favorite, and Rahm is Rahm the number one player in the world right now still, or is it now Scheffler? I'm not sure.
I haven't looked at that ranking.
I thought it was Rahm still, but it might be Scheffler right now, and I'm not 100%.
I'm seeing Scheffler 1, Rory 2, Rahm 3.
Okay, so okay. But that's probably off Scottish because Rahm was ahead of Rory before that, I believe.
And
Scheffler's the one.
And Hovland's up to 5.
Who's 4?
Cantlay.
Yeah, Patrick
Cantlay. Had another great year.
Another guy that you're waiting to see break through.
Now remember, the golf rankings counts for the last 2 years also.
Yep, absolutely. But Cantlay's always in contention. Know. What he does is he makes the cut, and then all of a sudden he has one bad day, and then he has one really good day to make a run, usually on Saturday or Sunday. It's really kind of interesting with Cantlay. He's a hell of a player.
What's amazing is somebody like Koepka, who can't get points from the tournaments because he's playing on the LIV Golf, and they don't let him play except for the majors. He's 12th in the world ranking still.
He's a stud. He's been that good in the big ones.
Yep. Terrell Hatton, another one, 13th I mean, he's another English guy that
Hatton was in contention all weekend at the Scottish Open as well.
He fell apart at the end there.
He fell apart on Sunday.
Yep.
But he was in contention the whole weekend. All right. Any other thoughts on the golf, boys?
No.
All right. So G started with golf. Kev, where you going?
Want to do baseball? Get that
sure.
over with because of...
The questions are only going to get harder. So there we go. Baseball. Fun stuff.
Wonderful New York teams.
Well, since you might as well leave with your team, and me and Gino have plenty to say about ours.
Crappy New York baseball. Again.
Boy, did they come out flat against the Dodgers. They were lucky they won that Sunday night game. I've said this for the last couple of weeks. This is not a team that you sell off everybody because you're also looking ahead to next year. And if you start trading off Scherzer and Verlander, you have to replace them next year. And that means, you're going to have to eat a lot of their money to be able to trade them. And then you're going to still have to pay somebody else on top of them to replace them. So the trade candidates to me are Robertson, Pham, maybe Canna, if he can get anything from them. Other than that, I don't see too many other attractive names out there for teams.
If somebody likes Vientos, he's a guy you could throw in.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not saying that anyone's going to like Vientos. I'm just saying he's a young guy. If somebody feels like they want a bat off the bench, that could do some damage. That's the only thing I'm thinking.
Here's my problem. I don't trust Billy Epler to make a trade right now. You look at the trade deadline last year when you traded for Darren Ruff and he gave up J.D. Davis, which, at the time, Davis needed to go someplace else to – he wasn't going to make it in the Mets. But then he also traded three other guys with him.
Davis sucks this year.
Oh, Davis is awful. Darren Ruff is playing much better. Even before he hurt his arm, Colin Holderman would have been a good addition to this bullpen this year. He traded him for Vogelback, who I can't wait to get off the team. Look at this year. The one trade he's made this season was to trade Muckenhorn, who we don't know anything about because, he's the only thing I know is he's a lefty reliever. Good numbers in the minors. He had three games up here with the Mets. Traded him for Trevor Gott and also took on Chris Flexen's salary just to cut him, just to give Seattle some salary relief. Trevor Goff in 226 career games has a 4.75 ERA and a 1.31 whip. This is the crap we're trading for? Because he fits in right in with Leone and Brigham and all the other crap at the back end of the bullpen for the Mets. He almost blew the Sunday night game. He gave up the run against the Dodgers. The first time he got put into a big spot, he blew the game. Or he blew the lead. Luckily, they won it. Last night, he comes in with 11-5 lead. The next thing you know, he gives up three runners and three hits, three runs, and it's 11-8. And all of a sudden, we're using our key guys in the bullpen. I don't trust Epler to make a trade right now. That's the problem. But I think
if you wind up standing pat, you know better, no worse going into next year.
Right.
He still needs to rebuild the bullpen in the offseason.
Yeah.
Still needs to make some moves here and there. So either way, you know what I mean? Hopefully you get Diaz back at some point where he helps you enough. You know what I mean? So.
No, Diaz is progressing nicely from everything you hear. Everything's going well. And I'm torn. Part of me says, hey, you keep striving, you keep rehabbing like you're going to pitch this year. For his peace of mind, if he's healthy enough and the doctors clear him, do you want to see him at least, if the season's lost, do you want to see him at least once or twice in September just to let him get there on the mound? I certainly
absolutely
do.
I do. Get the cobwebs out now. Get all the self-doubt out now. Let it go.
Yep. Now, on the positive side for the Mets, at least, the last two nights, we're recording this Wednesday night. Beatty's got back-to-back games with home runs, so maybe he's starting to rediscover his stroke. Alvarez had two home runs Tuesday night. He's up to 19 for the year, and he's up to 7 home runs in July. He's really finding his power stroke. Only 7 more home runs to catch Johnny Bench for the record for 21-year-old catchers, if you care about that stuff. But, you know, these are the two young guys who have been given a chance, who have, you know, much like Volpe for the Yankees, has had a chance to work through some of their issues here in the major league level. Because there's nothing else that they can really replace them with, I don't think.
No, I mean, listen.
And for the rest of the year,
they're in a tough spot, but the kids have looked bright on that team.
Yep. And once Mauricio looks like they're playing him in left field in the minors, once he's comfortable enough in left field, I want him up here, you know, let's say August 2nd after the trading deadline, after maybe we get rid of Pham and Rakana. I want to see him in left field. Then I want to see Vientos up here DHing every day. Get rid of Vogelback. We don't need him. You know, let's spend 2 months. Let's see what these kids have over a good solid 2 month stretch. Just play them every
day.
Everything
I hear about Vogelback, Kev, is that Alonzo's good friends with him and he likes him. And that's the only reason he's here.
Yay.
That's what I hear. That's what I hear. Again, it's not like I'm in the locker room hearing it. That's what people are reporting. You know what I mean? I don't know their friendship. I don't know if he carries his bags. I don't know what the hell's going on there.
Any closing comments on the Mets?
Kev? I was going to say, let me combine. This is going to be a Yankee and Mets thing.
Okay, go ahead.
And I know Darren hates advanced saber metrics and all. I like
looking at it. Can't wait for this scrap. All right, go ahead.
I'm old fashioned like you. I still like my batting average, home runs, and RBIs. But I think, you know, some of these other metrics help to put things in perspective. Do you know what team is 30th in the league in batting average and balls in play?
I'm gonna say it's the Yankees or the Mets. Just a guess.
30th is the Yankees. You know who's 29th?
Okay. The Mets.
That would be the Mets. They are the two worst teams in BABIP. So these are teams that just are not.
The fact that you yelled out the acronym like people freaking know it. That was
batting average and balls in play.
That's so ridiculous.
There are 153 qualified batters for batting titles and all. You know who is ranked 153rd in BABIP? Pete Alonso, 182.
Listen, wow. You take away his April and his early part of the year, he has not been good.
No.
Let's be honest. He got off to a ripping start, but he has not been good.
Now, when you look at those numbers, do you sit there saying, and he has not looked good since coming back from the wrist injury. Do you start getting into the mental? Because when you look at, you know, things like hard hit percentage and all, he's near the top in hard hit percentage of balls. He's not getting any luck either when he hits it. At some point, when you're hitting in bad luck and you see the batting average at 230, 220, mentally, at what point do you then start to press, thinking, I've got to get this turned around, and it just puts you even more into a spiral?
My question is, do they really care about batting average anymore, though? Do they really even care? Any of these guys even care?
I think there's still something. I
care. You care. G cares. Do these guys even care?
I think Alonso wants at least see a 250 up there. I'm not saying he wants to see 300, but that's to me. I don't know.
I would like to think he'd like to see that.
Yeah.
I just don't know if they care.
I think both teams have so many holes at the moment that I'd like to tell you that BABIP means something right now. I don't know if it means something when you have teams that are not playing well at all.
But when you're not playing well and also not getting luck when you do get the bat on the ball, plays into it. It just snowballs. I think it's just part of the process. It snowballs that when you're not playing well, you make contact and you can't get the hits, you know, because it bounces out over the course of a full season or two. You know, it's a pretty you know, even keel there. And I don't know, just my thought.
All right.
I'm not into sabermetrics like, you know, a lot of these other things are. I don't live and die by a sabermetric guy, but I just thought it was something
now. Let's
a little beyond the numbers.
Now let's move to the other crappy New York baseball team. Darren?
Last place New York Yankees. The Stump Merrill era. Last time we saw last place this late in the season. Also, you gotta love the fact that the history of the Yankees was broken the other night. On Sunday, the Yankees, for the first time in their history, blew two-run leads after the eighth inning and did not win a game. The Yankees have been around a long time. That's how good this pen is. I know statistically it looks like they're okay. They're not. Every King, you know, he has a good outing, bad outing. Marinaccio, you can't trust anybody on this team. But the biggest problem, G, as we know, is that nobody on this team can hit. And they almost didn't re-sign Judge. Remember? I mean, they weren't the highest bidder. Can you imagine what this lineup would be like? I mean, and Judge isn't playing right now, obviously, and when he comes back, it'll be a big difference for them. But they almost didn't re-sign Judge. This team has so many glaring holes, it's scary as hell. Hopefully, we've seen Donaldson for the last time ever. This injury kind of wipes him out. Rizzo hasn't hit a home run since May, yet he gets a pass because everybody else is that bad. This guy, who's supposed to be our power-hitting first baseman, hasn't hit a homer since May. Volpe spiked up to 226. Now he's back down to 207. What the hell? We never went into Anaheim, and we had a chance to put our foot on the throat of Anaheim and force him to trade Shohei, and instead we're letting them sweep us. I'm being honest. There would have been five games under 500, and Shohei would have been out the door. Now they sweep the Yankees, and they're, what, within 3.5 or 4 of the wild card. Did they sell? They may not now. So not that it matters either way, but they turn the Angels season around. The A's beat the Red Sox 2 out of 3 as well, but the Yankees are in dead last place in the American League East. Their offense is the worst one in the division. Outside of Cole, you can't trust anybody in the rotation. Herman's good, then he's bad. Then he's okay, then he's awful. Severino's okay, and then he's horrible. The bullpen, one day Clay Holmes looks good, the next day Clay Holmes looks meh. You know, I mean, there's nothing to like, G. Peraza's up. I'm happy he's up. He's hitting 195. They bat him leadoff. The 207 hitter of Volpe batting fifth tonight. LeMayu, your favorite, hitting cleanup. Frenchy Cordero batting sixth. Got 2 hits tonight. Get his average up to 180. This is what we're dealing with. This team is awful to watch. It's like watching minor league baseball. It's like the other team's playing with aluminum bats and they're playing with wood. G?
It's the entire team. I haven't seen this in a very long time where the entire team is basically horrible. The last time this happened,
Kevin was still a Yankee fan. I'm not joking. Brookins, Alvaro Espinosa. You remember these teams on the stump? Anyway, I'm sorry, G.
Yep.
No, that's all right. The entire order is just horrible. I have such a hard time trying to watch this. Because the entire team is just the whole team is awful right now, hitting wise. They can't hit the ball.
It's hard to watch this team.
It's so hard to watch. It really is. I don't know. It's so hard to watch. The team, they can't get anything going. It's just I don't know.
It's time for Cashman to go. I mean, I'm sorry. This is the squad he put on the field. And there was it wasn't like a bunch of guys weren't playing to the back of their cards completely. Stanton had been slumping. Rizzo hadn't been great. Torres coming off a bad year. The kids you don't know about. Bader was coming off injury. Judge was the only guy that you counted on before this started. Donaldson coming off a bad year. It wasn't like he did anything to fix any of the holes. And he decided not to get a closer. As Clay Holmes showed you down the stretch last year, that he wasn't the guy. But they decided not to do that anyway. Franchi just goes yard, 6-3. Franchi's trying to get that average up to 200 tonight, baby. But this is unwatchable team, G. This is the Stump Merrill era. Only the thing was, there were kids and no one expected us to win. I didn't even hate watching them as much then.
I didn't
hate them as much as I hate watching these guys play.
Yeah, I mean, even if Judge is in the middle of this lineup, they're still a bad lineup right now. You know, we like to say that in the offseason that, Judge is going to make the whole lineup better. I don't know how he makes this lineup better at this moment. He'll hit the ball, but I don't know how he makes this lineup better at this
point. What he does is he gets on base. He's going to walk a lot because they're not going to be afraid to pitch to anybody else. He's going to walk around the base. People will bat with runners on base, which they haven't done pretty much all season. And the BABIP or whatever you call it, Kev. I don't even know what that stat was. I mean, he makes it a little bit better. That's about it. Maybe he might pass them and get us up to 29th. That's about it. I don't know. Unwatchable team.
It's horrible. It really is.
I can't stand it. Any other thoughts on baseball, boys? I just think that the Orioles finally caught the Rays and they're ahead of them in the loss column. I think it's kind of impressive. The Giants are right there with the Dodgers. I mean, there's some pretty exciting races going on. The Rangers won like 5 in a row going into tonight. And I think they won today. They go 6 in a row to kind of strengthen their lead over the Astros. And the Brewers, because the Reds fell apart for a while, they lost six in a row in a stretch. The Brewers took the lead in their division, and the Pirates finally fell out of it, which means Bednar might be available to a team not like the Yankees or Mets that actually has something to gain from this season.
The series going on in the last couple of days between the Braves and the Diamondbacks has been fantastic. That's about the only thing. Yeah, I have no other baseball points. So,
I mean, the Orioles avoided the sweep against the Dodgers today. They roughed up Julio Urias. Baltimore catching Tampa. I mean, Baltimore and Cincinnati coming in a year early, both very impressive for both teams. I mean, I don't think Cincinnati's going to hold because the pitching just isn't there, even though they're a fun team. They called up the other kid, Encarnacion Strain. They're ready to go. I mean, and the Orioles have been doing it all year. And Jerry Means might be coming back. I don't know how much he does for them, but you know, he was the ace going in before he got hurt. So yeah, we'll see what happens. Any other points on baseball, boys?
Now, where do you want to go next, Darren? You're up.
Okay, let's go NBA.
Go ahead. Talk to us.
What the hell is the NBA tournament, in-season tournament, about? Just when I thought I couldn't hate this sport anymore, now the teams are in these made-up divisions where they will play each other for games that count toward the regular season. And in a round-robin thing, where I think they play Tuesdays and Fridays, something like that. I'm trying to remember. And then the winners of each division plus two wild cards that had good enough records in these things will be advancing to another play-in tournament. This is what I think, and I might be crazy. I think what Silva's trying to do is play off the UEFA, play off the teams,
exactly,
and try to invite a couple of European teams, maybe get some teams from Australia, maybe get some teams from South America. But here's the thing. They don't do that and count them as regular season games. That's counted as its own little league. Even the World Baseball Classic doesn't do that where it counts. And I know the Met fans love the World Baseball Classic. Kev can't wait for his players to go out there for the next one.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't get it. If he's trying to do something special with, like, this international type of tournament with the best teams playing each other, listen, I get it. But doing this during a regular season from November 3rd through November 28th and then the playoffs starting up and going through December 9th, who the hell cares? It's like watching the Summer League. Who the hell cares?
I don't know
if you guys feel differently. I can't stand this. The NBA is the dumbest league I've ever seen. Jake?
I think it's a big mess. I think it's so convoluted, too. You got these teams and that team, and I don't know. Kev, maybe you have a better opinion on this, Kev.
No, the only thing I can compare it to, like Darren says, the UEFA type, or you know what English Premier League they've got, you know, Manchester City. Was it Manchester City? Arsenal? Whoever won this year.
Yeah, Man City.
It was Man City. Yeah, okay.
Come on, Ted Lasso, you got this.
Yeah. But they won the, you know, three different cups, you know, that were part of the English. That's what they're trying to do with the NBA. And, you know, the American sports fan cares about who wins the championship at the end of the season. That's all we care about. And this other stuff just doesn't matter to us.
I mean, listen, if you're going to do a tournament where you invite the best European teams in and you're going to get to see it head-to-head, listen, it might be interesting. But then you have to have a delay in the season. You have to take time off of the season for the players to focus on this. It's not like the rest of the league can go forward. It doesn't work that way. In any other sport where they do this, I don't know. I just thought it was the dumbest thing I'd seen in a while. And without any fanfare, it's just going to happen starting in November. I just thought I was stunned by it. I don't know.
Stunned. Anyway. I mean, the season will just be barely underway, and hey, we've got this tournament.
And you know what? It doesn't really matter because it's your regular season game, but you're in a league with a bunch of teams that you're not normally with. Like the Knicks and the Bucks are in the same division.
Yeah,
that makes sense. I have no idea what they're doing. It's the silliest thing I've ever seen. But, you know, whatever. Nobody's going to listen to me about the NBA anyway. Jay, you're up next. That was my potpourri thing because I couldn't wait to get rid of it.
I'll go NFL.
Okay.
We saw Hopkins get traded to the sign with the Titans this week. If they're all healthy, Hopkins and Derrick Henry and Tannehill for 17 games could do something really good. They really could put up numbers. The problem is combined, you don't know how many games you're going to get from these guys. Any points on Hopkins before I move to my second NFL?
Listen, item. he was the prized possession out there. They have bid people for him. What they did was they made themselves relevant this year and said Jacksonville isn't going to be able to walk away with it. We're going to give you a battle. They have a bruising running back. They always put up a pretty good offensive line. Defensively, this team isn't as good as they've been in the last few years, so it's going to be interesting to see what they do there. If Tannehill has the catch radius stuff, and I'm going to pull the Kevin on the football side, but when they talk about this stuff, this guy doesn't drop any passes. No. He doesn't drop anything. Anything that's near him, he catches. He has the best hands in the NFL. He's not the fastest guy, but he's always open and he catches everything. It's going to be a difference maker, and I don't think he's on the Jets' schedule, so I'm excited about it. Let him go.
I almost feel like he's underrated because you hear about Jefferson and Chase and all the big guys who have recently come into the league from college. And I think Hopkins being out in Arizona, just flew under the radar.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
NFL?
Yeah, the other NFL point's going to be all these running backs that are having issues now with the franchise tag. Barkley, Jacobs, Pollard. We hear Eckler's not happy. Dalvin Cook is unsigned. What is going on with these running backs? The devaluation of the running back in the NFL is really starting to take its toll, is what it looks like. You see all these teams with two running backs, and if they're going to have two running backs, they're not going to pay one running back an exorbitant amount because they want two running backs in their backfield. Any thoughts on the running back situation? Well, Darren, what do you think?
Fantasy-wise, this is what it's about now. Now it's about it's a throwing league. It's about guys that can catch out of the backfield, protect a little bit, and run the ball 18 times. Listen, from the 80s and 90s, when you had running backs getting 35, Jerome Bettis getting 35 carries, Joe Morris at 5'8", getting, 30, 33 carries in a game. Doesn't exist anymore. Freeman McNeil getting up slowly, but getting the ball in the next play. I mean, they've changed the game. A guy like Saquon, who had such a magical year last year, is now threatening not to play this year. I don't know if he's going to. It doesn't make much sense in getting your money the year after if you don't play. You can play for your contract. But what the Giants have said is that we don't value your position, and most people don't value the running back position. Had they signed him to a long-term deal, there'll be as many people complaining about that as are the ones that are complaining that he wasn't signed, because it's just a position not of value anymore. Kev?
Well, you've seen it with the NFL draft. There are so few running backs drafted in the first round anymore. So that just shows there is no value at all to an NFL team for running back. And when you're not getting first-round money, the contracts, come in at a much cheaper price, and they feel like they can definitely replace and use, running back by committee and pay a hell of a lot less than by having one bell cow.
Ricky Williams was traded for an entire draft. We all remember that with Dickett putting a cigar in his mouth, putting his golf clubs over his shoulder, and walking out the door.
Yep.
I traded my draft. I don't have to do anymore. I have Ricky Williams. If Breece Hall came out 10 years ago, he would have been a first-round pick. The Jets were able to get him in the second round last year for reasons that you mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's all I got on NFL. If you guys have anything to add.
Two quick points. Quinnen is signed. Very excited. Yes. Quinnen Williams. The Jets wanted to give him 5 years. He wanted four. He won. He got his 4 years. He got his $96 million. He got more guaranteed money than Lawrence. So he's happy. He's number two behind Donald. Chris Jones will probably pass him in the near future, just because that's the way the Chiefs are going to probably play it, because he probably set the market for them. The Jets, I believe, just finalized a trade for Denzel Mims to the Lions. Don't have the details on it yet, but the Lions have made the offer for Mims, which surprised me. I thought it was going to be more of a team that runs the ball a ton that wanted the good blocking that Mims gives you. But apparently this deal is supposed to go down tonight. So that was the other issue I had in the NFL. Kev?
One thing, Quinnen, I think he wanted the 4 years, especially to make sure he hits free agency before he turns 30 again.
Yep, absolutely.
I think that 30 numbers, just turns people off when you're sitting there at 28, 29. I think you still got more bargaining power.
Oh, no, it was a smart move by Quinnen. He didn't budge. The Jets wanted to give him five. I mean, the dollar amount was the same, apparently. It was going to be five for the same 24 a year. and he didn't want to go higher than four, him and his agent. It sucks for me. I'd rather him for five, but I'm just glad he signed, and he's the bell cow, man. He's the best defensive player we have.
And when's the last time we had a high draft pick sign a second contract with the team?
It's been a while.
Do we have to go back to Muhammad Wilkerson?
We do, actually. That's the last guy.
That's the last guy, right? I mean, Wilkerson. That's really
we've been bad. That good in the draft. But hopefully Sauce adds to that, and Wilson, a couple of the other guys in here.
Garrett Wilson, we have healthy. Some stars. Yep.
We have some young talent here, and people seem to want to come. So I can't wait to start talking football, I'll be honest.
It's coming soon.
And on your Denzel Mims thing, you know, part of me would have liked to have seen him in training camp and in preseason. Well, I don't know if Rodgers has ever gone playing preseason. He hasn't in the last few years, but part of me would have liked to have seen him working with Rodgers to see if we could recapture anything. Because remember, when the Jets made that pick, that was late second round, I think.
Yep.
When they drafted him, we loved that pick.
I did. He had good size.
Good size.
Didn't have great hands, but good size.
No, that's one thing that we were missing. And, you know, if we're looking at our size receivers, you know, we know Corey Davis is going to be hurt at some point this year.
I think the thought is to try to get rid of anyone with any kind of veteranship, because I think they want to try to figure out a way to get Cook in, and they want to, you know, listen, there's a lot to look at for the Jets. The Jets have not had this kind of, I don't know, excitement about the program in forever. Even under the Rex years, you didn't have the excitement about the offense we do now. We just didn't. You didn't have that excitement about Sanchez. And that was with Santonio Holmes, who's the other guy? It was Braylon Edwards. You had Edwards and Holmes. You had Thomas Jones. You had some pretty good players. And this is the most exciting the offense is. A great offensive line, but Rodgers takes the team to a new level as an offensive quarterback and the single. Yeah,
absolutely. All right, Kev, you're up. Where are you going?
Wimbledon hit tennis. An epic final.
Kev throwing around epic.
Well, he had one and two. The old guard, Djokovic. The new guard, Alcaraz. 4 hours and 45 minutes of tennis. High-level tennis. And Alcaraz comes through with his second major. He followed up, you know, last year he won the U.S. Open for his first. So, you know, two majors as he's 20 years old. You know, we're seeing the change in the guard here. You go back 20 years now, 80 tournaments, 80 majors over the last 20 years between Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer. They won 65 of the 80. That left 15 amazing others. Number. In the last 20 years, the only other guys who have won multiple majors, Murray's got three, Wawrinka's got three, and Alcaraz now has two. So what's going to be interesting going ahead is who's going to join Alcaraz in that next wave. Can Alcaraz have his Nadal, his Federer, if he can pair him to Djokovic?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, there's a chance if nobody can step up, you know, there's a chance that this guy can run off a hell of a lot of majors before somebody else steps up.
Yeah, I mean,
the guys you're looking at are guys like Ruud, Sinner, Medvedev. Yep. Those are the guys you're looking at, right? And I don't think Djokovic is done by any stretch.
Oh, no.
Losing a five-setter in 4:45. I mean, he still comes in as a guy that will be probably second choice now to win the Open. But he'll be one of the highly rated guys at the U.S. Open.
I mean, last five majors has been Djokovic 3 and Alcaraz 2. I mean, it's not like Djokovic is done.
Yeah, sure. No, I think that Djokovic is definitely definitely not done. And I think he has a chance of winning the U.S. Open. I mean, Alcaraz gets to everything. That's the one thing that's fun about watching him. Yep. He's just great. And the grass helps with that, actually. Slows the ball up a little bit than the hard court. But nonetheless, I think this kid's that's the question what you asked is the whole thing. Who's the guy that's going to sit there and challenge him going forward? Has he even come around yet? You wait for an American to do it, and they just haven't done it. I mean, so, you know, you hope that one of the Americans can emerge, but there's no consistency from any of the Americans. A guy has a good tournament, then he has a bad one. A good one, then a bad one.
I was excited about this Eubanks kid and then realized he's 27. He's not a kid.
He's not a kid. You know, and I'm blanking on the kid's name. The kid that was a 16 seed, he got knocked out early. You know, there are a bunch of Americans. It's just they can't get to the next level. They don't do anything that blows you away. And as bad as that might be for Alcaraz, is there any – do you know any of the women anymore? I mean, is there anybody you sit there and say, I have to watch?
You mean Marqueta Von Drusova? Sorry, Gina.
Not even that. Yeah, before you get to the women, so
yeah.
third longest Wimbledon final ever, right? And what I thought was amazing was Djokovic won the first set 6-1. And then he actually had a chance because they went to the tie break in the second set. He winds up losing the tie break 8-6. And then the third set, Alcaraz just dominates at 6-1. And it's like boom, boom, boom. And all of a sudden, Alcaraz is up 2-1 in sets. Djokovic still comes back in the fourth set to win 6-3. Yeah. And then they play a fifth set where, I mean, it winds up going 6-4, so it's not even one-sided. It's back and forth again. It was a phenomenal final. It really was. But go ahead. We can get to the women now.
No, my only point, there are no dominant American women anymore. Coco Gauff is the one you look for, and she got knocked out my first round on this one, I think. Maybe it was second. I'm not sure. She was out real early. There's no household name. There's no woman that you go out there and say, I want to watch. I used to want to watch Serena. And to be honest with you, there were a couple other players I liked to watch as well. And right now, you just don't have that woman that you're like, well, I can't wait to see who's on the women's draw. I can't wait to see who this one's going to play. We just don't have that right now. And this is the first time I can remember it like this with women. You had Steffi Graf. You had Seles. You had the Williams sisters. You had Navratilova. You had Everett. You had all these players coming all the way through straight where you saw them all. You had Osaka looking like she was going to be the person taking from Serena. And now you have nobody. None of these women are consistent enough where you're like, wow, I need to make sure I'm watching this match. It just isn't there anymore, Kev. I don't know what you think, but I have a hard time with it.
Yeah, like I said, without the American women in there, without anybody being overly dominant, it just feels like it's just another week on the women's tour.
It just doesn't feel special. By the way, Harrison Bader hurt again. Anyway, well, I'll just put it that way. Left rib contusion, apparently. The game early tonight. Love this team.
All right, Darren, where are we going next?
Can Peraza play? U.S. Women's World Cup, Kevin. As I know you've been following closely, the women are in Group E. They'll start Friday against Vietnam, and which should be a barn burner.
Vietnam is plus 100,000 to win the World Cup.
Listen, you know what? I'll watch it here and there. The only other, I guess, what the second favorite is England at this point.
England, yep.
And you know, Brazil's up there. Not right away. Sweden's up there a little bit. I mean, there's a bunch of other countries up there. There was another European country that was up there that I can't think of. I'm sorry. Maybe it was Norway. I'm not sure who it was. Maybe Germany. But it's the U.S. is to lose pretty much. Once again, not a fan of the personalities that lead this team on the field. I root for America and everything. I'm an Olympics junkie. I watch anything that's American. I'm all over it. And they've made me not really root for them very hard, which is hard to do. I watch water polo for the U.S. women and get spirited. And this is not something that I have the same enjoyment for. Like I did 20, 25, 30 years ago. I used to enjoy it with Mia Hamm and those great players. And who was the girl? Brandi Chastain. You know, and Scurry and Nett. And then Hope Solo came in and all that other stuff. But it's become a little very political team, which makes it a little bit harder. I don't know how you boys feel about it.
I know you've got Alex Morgan, and you've got a bunch of other ladies out there.
Yeah, I like the girl that drank the milk. She's the one that picked up the flag when they threw it on the floor. I'm blanking on her name.
Was that Julie Ertz, or was that one of the other ones?
No, it wasn't Ertz. It was not Julie Ertz.
Kelly O'Hara?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I just wrote O'Hara down. you know, from teams past, you know, just recognize a couple of names here. O'Hara, Ertz, Lindsey Horan, Rose Lavelle, Kristy Mewis, of course, Rapinoe. One of the new ones that, you know, I know the name because her famous father, Trinity Rodman.
Yes,
it's Dennis Rodman's daughter, is a member of the U.S. Women's National Team. Like I said, Aaron, I'll watch it because it's Team USA, but I'm not. It's not appointment viewing for me.
And you know what? 20 years it was. 20 years ago it was. 16 years ago it was. 12 years ago it was. I'm just not there anymore.
I mean, I remember watching Carly Lloyd score the hat trick against. I think it was China that year.
No, I do remember it, and you know what? It was. They've been a phenomenal. They've been a dynasty, so to speak. They've been fantastic. They've been absolutely fantastic. I'm not going to root for other countries against them, no matter what I may say. But the problem is that the sport doesn't necessarily have still doesn't have the competition level. There are teams that are far superior to others. Vietnam has no shot against the United States.
When you look at the team sports, you know, soccer and basketball in particular, when you look at the U.S. team, the women's teams in those sports compared to other countries, this is where Title IX has done so much for women's sports in the last 50 years.
Agreed. That
they have so many opportunities to play through college to then develop their skills and be able to represent the U.S. and show the world that, hey, the American athletes in these team sports are far superior to anybody else. And, you know, anybody who tries to weaken Title IX is a fool.
Agreed.
You know, these women in college deserve a chance to still represent first their schools, to get the scholarship opportunities just like the boys do, and, you know, have a chance to become pros. Now,
nobody spoke of what you said more than Matt Martina Navratilova. and Megan Rapinoe disagree with it.
So, yep. But you know, but no matter what you do, but then after you get to the pro level, you know, that's up to the pro. That's up to the fans to decide if they want to watch you or not.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
Got the opportunity. That's what you want.
Here's the thing. This is America. Anybody can pick and choose whatever they like. They can take any side in any argument they want. Whether we agree or disagree with them is immaterial. Simple fact of the matter is that these rights were put in there to protect women, and right now those rights are being taken away, and the people that wanted them in so badly are the ones that are taking them away, and it's a little strange.
Yep.
G, any thoughts on the political? G loves it when we get political.
I didn't think we got political there.
We kept it clean, Kev. Last week was a nightmare. We kept it clean.
Last item is the Mexico winning the Gold Cup. Darren?
Listen, I thought Panama hung in there. I mean, the thing with Mexico got a couple of bad breaks. The goal that was disallowed by VAR, it was a good call. They got it right. The red card that was then arbitrarily taken away after discussing it. I didn't think it was a red card, but at the same point in time, it was awarded, and then they took it back away, which the referee has the right to do. The goal was fantastic. They brought this kid in as a sub. I can't think of his name right
Jimenez.
Now. Sorry. What was it?
Jimenez,
did you write it down or you remembered it?
I wrote it down, of course.
I forgot. It was a great one-on-one goal. The defender had a yellow card already, so he couldn't do anything to stop him. Kicked it away. Beautiful job. Mexico deserved the win, to be honest with you. They were the better team that night. Panama was better than the U.S. in the semi, I thought. Went down to kicks, and, Panama buried the kicks better than the U.S. did. That's what it came down to on that. Kev?
The shots were 23 with 7-9 goal for Mexico, 14 with 2-1 goal from Panama. So, like I said, Mexico dominated the game from that perspective. And I think going back, you could tell Panama's getting more and more tired as the game went on. That goes back to the semifinals. Panama had to go to kicks against the U.S. And I think that's an emotional victory. Anytime you get a smaller country that can beat the U.S., Mexico had a 3-0 win. I forget who they played.
Jamaica.
Oh, it was Jamaica. That's right. It's Jamaica. But in soccer, a 3-0 win is a cakewalk.
Also, it was a Mexico home game.
Oh,
the crowd U.S. wouldn't have sold out the arena as well as Mexico did.
SoFi Stadium.
There might have been 30 Panama fans in the entire arena, it seemed like.
SoFi Stadium was 100% behind Mexico.
Listen, the fans come out and support. I don't root for Mexico in CONCACAF. It's a rivalry against the U.S. I find them to play dirtier than the United States in these games. Mexican fans might feel the complete opposite. It depends on how you watch the game, but the Mexicans are a very talented squad, well, and they win the Gold Cup.
Even in the Panama game, the fouls, 24 on Mexico, only 17 on Panama.
Yeah, Mexico always
fouls. So Mexico always plays. Mexico plays right to the edge, a lot of times over.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, even though the United States got knocked out in the semis, the future looks bright on this team. None of the stars were playing in this tournament outside of goaltending with Matt Turner.
Yep.
And, you know, you feel like that these kids up and coming right now are going to find – some of them are going to find a really nice place on this team going forward, replace some of the veterans that can't contribute as much. But I think it's the golden age of U.S. soccer right now, even though they got knocked out in the semis. I think that we have 2 to 3 World Cups to really do some damage, and we'll see what happens with it, you know?
Got to eventually get to the knockout stage and win a game or two there.
You just do. You have to find your way into the quarters and then the semis.
Yep.
You got to find your way in there and be able to play with the big European countries or the big South American countries. Otherwise, you're not taken seriously. Otherwise, U.S. is nice. They might get out of it, and then they'll lose the first game that they play. I mean, we saw it against the Netherlands. They lost. I mean, I don't think they played badly in that game.
Oh, not at all.
But they lost. Netherlands was better. Gino was much more adamant about Netherlands' performance than you and I were, Kev. And I'm not saying Gino was right and we were wrong or vice versa. But the U.S., I thought they could hold their head up high after the loss against a really dominant team, against La Orange. But, you know, but at the same time, you know, it's like like you said, they have to find a way into a quarter and a semi. They just have to find a way out of the round of 16.
Yep.
Two last quick points. I mean, this boxing, Crawford and Spence is not this weekend, but next weekend. Really a great fight. If you get a chance to watch it, Bud Crawford and Errol Spence Jr., it's an epic. It's two guys in their primes, undefeated, fighting each other. You don't get that in boxing much anymore. The other one, September 30th, Canelo fights Jermell Charlo, one of the Charlo twins. Another great fight. So the boxing is trying to book some fights that mean something. Saratoga's open, so I'm happy. That's all I got. Kev, anything?
Nope, I got nothing else.
G?
That's it for
all
me.
All right. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Aaron here with Gino and Kevin talking about the wonderful world of sports. I still don't get what the NBA is trying to do, but they're the NBA, and they get to do whatever the heck they want because everybody at the age of 17 loves the sport. Anyone that's an adult just sits there and scratches their head saying, why can't anything stay the same? But please download the podcast wherever you can get podcasts, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, wherever you can get it. Follow on Facebook. We post something back, send something, share it, like it, do all sorts of different things with it. But tell us what you want to hear about. We want to keep talking about it. It's been a lull time of the year right now. But we're starting to pick up as football season and training camps will be underway, and the three of us can't wait. So without any further ado.
Especially the football, because, you know, baseball, we're not going to have much to talk about.
We're going to be talking about the Braves. Baseball. We're going to talk about the Braves and the Orioles. Anyway.
Oh, wonderful.
So without any further ado, everybody, may your sports be with you.